When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Hey, it's Jake Halpern here. If you've ever wondered what it's like to make a true crime podcast like Deep Cover, well, now's your chance to find out. Join me and my friend Dana Goodyear, who's the host of Pushkin's Lost Hills podcast, on March 16th for a digital conversation on true crime storytelling. We'll talk about how we make our stories dramatic and accurate and how we navigate all the ethical dilemmas that we face in the process. Get your tickets now at momenthouse.com/DCLH. That's momenthouse.com/DCLH.
Hi, my name is Cassidy Zachary.
And I am April Callahan.
And we are fashion historians.
Yep, and co-hosts and the creators of the podcast Dressed, The History of Fashion, which is dedicated to investigating the significance of dress from throughout history and around the world.
And we are so excited to bring you a brand new season celebrating groundbreaking fashion figures and exploring the history of everything from corsets to blue jeans.
Dressed, The History of Fashion is available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your favorite shows. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
My name's Rainn Wilson, and I played Dwight Kurt Schrute.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Office Deep Dive. We're back, baby! That's right. We are back. I am your host, Brian Baumgartner. Today, you are going to be listening to the second part of my conversation with Rainn Wilson. So, just like with Angela, I wanted to save this part of Rainn's interview for our Camera as Character series, because Dwight had one of the most interesting relationships with the camera on the show. Sometimes it was like he was hiding from it. He hated it. But at other times, the camera was his friend. Like in the scene from Stress Relief where he's lighting the fire. He thinks the camera gets what I'm doing, right? And we also talked about many other important topics, like Rainn's dynamic with Steve Carell, whether The Office could indeed be made today, and who in the cast was the most likely to get fired. As always, Rainn had so many insightful things to say. I just love talking to him about our show, though I hate that I'm being so nice to him, But you know what? I can't help it. I love him. You love him. America loves him. Dwight is everyone's favorite. I'm not bitter about that at all. I'm a little bitter about that. But without further ado, here he is, Rainn Wilson.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
When we talk about what was unique about the show, the camera is the character. To me, what's impressive and what I'm tremendously proud of in the show is that every shot wasn't about how can we cover this person the best, how can we get this, or even how can we get this joke, but is the camera there? Where is it? What story is that telling? Because we're supposedly seeing this through a documentarian's lens. I mean, your interactions with the cameras elevated Dwight to an even higher level than it was.
Yeah, so there was a constant negotiation about where the cameras should be for a scene. And Greg was very exacting about it. Randall Einhorn, one of our chief directors, Matt Sohn, one of our chief directors and cameramen, there was this constant dialogue, and it was very thorough. Nothing was done half-assed. You know, it was just kind of like, well, you know, we'd rehearse a scene. Maybe the director would have it plotted out, but the writer would come in and say, well, if the camera was here when he says that thing and then looks away, we can rack focus to the person in the foreground and get their reaction, and the other camera can get this other reaction. And then, you know, so it was, there was a lot of calculation that went on. The use of Venetian blinds was extraordinary. How do we shoot through the blinds? Is this a spy shot? Is it on this side of the blinds? On this side, are they aware the camera is there? And so if you look at the episodes, it's almost mathematical about, you know, how can we position the camera so it captures, seemingly effortlessly, captures the greatest number of reactions and interactions to bring out as much humanity and comedy at the same time. So, you know, when you would prep an episode, you would, you know, have the AD there and you'd kind of read through the scene and you'd think about where it would need to go. And you also didn't want to just always repeat. You didn't want to just always have like, you know, we'll just put the cameras in Michael's office, just shoot over one guy's left shoulder and the other guy's right shoulder. And just, you wanted to find new original ways of shooting stuff. And it was very precise. And sometimes it was a real puzzle. One of the challenges I remember having on one of the episodes, I can't remember which one, I think it was Classy Christmas, was that if people walk in and they're having a scene and you're shooting them, you have to whip around to get reactions on the other people. Whereas if you're on the other side and they step in front of the camera, so the camera has the deep background of the rest of the office behind the players in the foreground, then you get to follow the action and just rack focus past them, past the plant, past the copy machine, and get the reaction. So it's better to be on that side of the axis of shooting, because for people who don't know, there's a thing called the line when you're directing, and it's the axis between the principal players, and you're either on one side of the line or the other side of the line. You can't really play on both sides of the lines. It just would look really jumbled in the human brain. It's just how vision works. So I remember there being a lot of, you know, deep conversations, like, how do we get Steve in further so that the camera stays on this side? So it was very complex.
Yeah. One of the other things that I've been thinking about is you and I were theater actors, right? Steve, Angela, Oscar were really improv actors. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Craig Robinson and BJ, who were really stand-up guys. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, seems to me that there's something in what made our ensemble unique that had to do with that.
That's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that before, but I think that's a really good point. People had all of these different backgrounds that kind of suited their characters. And I don't know exactly how, but I definitely see that all kind of adding into the kind of the jambalaya of the ensemble. And also, like, remember, we were just post friends, right? This was 2004. And everyone was very interesting faces, you know? Even like John Krasinski, who's handsome, was not traditionally handsome in a lot of ways. You know, it's kind of long face and stuff like that. But really interesting and odd faces all around. And that was pretty groundbreaking for the time. You see it more now, but especially for network television at that time, it was just unheard of, all these kind of weirdos. But I think the diversity in our acting backgrounds, people brought different strengths, you know?
What do you think made the ensemble so special?
You?
Well, obviously. I was the main part of that.
I think Greg had a lot of experience. So he'd written on Seinfeld and Simpsons and created King of the Hill, of course, but he had been on a lot of other shows. And I think he was very careful to make sure that he wasn't casting any divas and that everyone was a team player and an ensemble player. So I think that one thing that theater and improv gives you is a sense of like, it's not the Rainn Wilson show or the Steve Carell show or whatever. It's about the ensemble. It's like, how do you make other people funnier? How do you play well with others? That was another thing. He picked people with also like just really good hearts. Like the people, when you look back on it, everyone is a really good-hearted person. Now, I've worked on TV shows where that is not the case. In fact, I remember, I forget which director it was. It was a director later on, season 5 or 6. And they were like, oh my God, I can't believe how much you guys love each other. Like, that we hug each other and high five, and in between takes, we're just laughing and watching videos and goofing off, and just a really loving environment. And he goes, I just got back from directing Desperate Housewives. It's like half the cast is not talking to the other half of the cast. You have to call people out of trailers at certain points in time, but they won't look at each other. They won't do the off-camera work with the other person. It's all this just cattiness and competitiveness, and that exists on a lot of different shows. You can kind of read about it, and it's pretty extraordinary.
And it wasn't there for us.
Not in the slightest, no.
No.
Yeah.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty, beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
We have this, like, we have this collection of characters that are existing within this office. And I think when you think about the show, that's what you think about. And you forget how much change we had. Like, even from season 3 and Jim leaving, and then Karen Filippelli and Andy coming in, and yeah. Ed, and then Ellie coming in. Like, we had sort of a constant revolving door, sure. Although not really revolving because not many people left. We just got bigger. I don't know. There's something interesting to me about the energy that was created by Greg constantly changing up and adding cast members,
right,
and making us go on locations.
And then later seasons, we had Clark Duke and
Jake Lacy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that was really smart. I mean, you know, I think Rashida and Ed Helms, like two of the greatest comedy actors of all time, coming in was a really needed breath of fresh air in that third season and really helped us a lot. And I think Ellie Kemper, who has proven herself to be one of the great comedians, television personalities, bringing her in season five or six or whenever it was, really helped the show as well. So he was very adept about that, as he is in all of his decision-making.
It's a hard time for hiring. So you need a hiring partner built for hard times. That's Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Offer valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From Cavalry Audio, the studio that brought you The Devil Within and The Shadow Girls, comes a new true crime podcast, The Pink Moon Murders.
The local sheriff believes there may be more than one killer. It's been 4 days since those bodies were found, and there's no arrest as of this morning.
They were afraid, especially out in that area. What if they come back or whatever?
It scared me to death. Like, it scared me. I was very, very intimidated to live here.
Crazy to think you go to sleep one night, maybe snuggling with your loved one, and never wake up. Or maybe you wake up in a struggle for your life, which you lose.
Join host David Ratterman as he explores one fateful night when evil descended upon small-town Ohio.
Killed 8 members of an Ohio family in a pre-planned execution.
A family was targeted, most of them targeted while they were sleeping.
The Pink Moon Murders is available on February 22nd, and you can follow The Pink Moon Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Give us your attention. We need everything you got fast. Waiting on reparations. We be the illest podcast.
Tune in every Thursday. Politics and wordplay. We fight for the people because they got us in the worst way.
From the Hill to Brazil, Bombay to Kanye.
From the left enclave to what the neocons say.
Every Thursday, cop the heady conversation.
And break us off with some bread because we waiting on reparations.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I consider you and Steve to be one of, if not the greatest comedy duos in the history of television.
Wow, that's so sweet of you, Brian. Thank you.
Oh, shut up.
I'm serious. I'm serious. That is very sweet of you.
I do. I just kind of want to do a little deep dive into you and he working. How much did you talk about those scenes before you were in the room shooting them?
We never talked about scenes. Never, ever. So you talk about the various skill sets that we brought to the equation as actors. So Steve was in Second City. He was kind of infamously great in Second City. He wrote a lot of their favorite best sketches. He toured with them. He had done the Dana Carvey show, and he was just really well known and super highly respected. And truly, like, I've worked with a lot of amazing actors over the years before The Office and since The Office. I've never worked with anyone like him before. He can improvise like it's almost a crime to call it improvisation, because he can just be and speak as a character, and it's both funny and pathetic and sad and moving at the same time. And it was just a true honor and marvel to like watch him work. And for me, like, again, I improvise pretty well. It's not really my bag. My bag is like creating memorable characters. That's how I think of myself as an actor. It's like, when I die and they show the little thing on the Emmys, the Academy Awards, I want people to go like, oh, wow, he created a lot of really interesting, memorable characters. But it was just about watching Steve go. So I thought of us as like, wow, these guys are the loudest podcast engineers I've ever heard in my life. It's
unbelievable.
I'm just kidding. You know, it's okay. I'll show you how to turn the volume down on the computer, though. So I thought of us as like, the vision that I had was like, or the image that I had is like, we're just these different musicians. Like Steve is like this, he's a violin player, or he's the alto sax or something. It's like, it's quick, it's mercurial, it's changing. And Dwight is kind of like a little more the bass. And also I thought part of Dwight's job and part of my job as an actor is just to keep him off balance just a little bit. So I would always vary my timings and sometimes just try and fuck with him. And I'll just all of a sudden say, I could really go for some spaghetti right about now. And he would just never miss a beat. He would spin it into pure gold. So it was really a miraculous thing to watch. But I think that when a comedy duo is in sync, they know kind of what instruments they're playing. And Dwight, I think sometimes I would try and be the violin, but Dwight was never, that's not his speed. It's not his rhythm. He doesn't work in the same way. And it was also really great to just know, like, this is what Steve does. He does it better than anyone else, like, on the planet. And I don't need to try and do that. I'll do my thing. My thing is to play kind of the big bass playing weirdo in the corner, you know, in opposition to that.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing that always amazed me, which was, he would come in, you know, like in the conference room scenes. These are sides, by the way. These are fake sides. And he would be like, you know, kind of like flipping through and like, okay, and I'm going to move here. And then we would rehearse for like an 8-page scene for about 6 minutes, and then be like, okay, everybody go get dressed and whatever. And then he would put on his suit and finish getting his makeup on, and he would walk back in, and it was like, boom. He was like fully there.
Yep, yep.
But that's why I wondered if you and he ever talked through any more of those things.
That was one of the things with Steve that I kind of saw really quick, because I wanted to just be respectful to his process and whatnot. Like, he did not want to work stuff out. He did not want to rehearse. He didn't want to like talk about it and stuff like that. I mean, he would, if there needed to be a change in the writing, he would bring in Greg or Paul or Jen or whomever and talk about like, could we change this? I don't feel like he would say this. He needs to say something more like that. But as far as the acting, it's like, it's off. Boom. Starting gun. The horses are off and you just go. And it worked really well.
Right. It occurred to me, one of the things that made you and Steve so unique goes to, not to dismiss this at all, you and John were hilarious together, but you were a much more classical duo. He was the straight man to you. Whereas with you and Steve, you both were crazy idiots, right? And still somehow it was made believable and real and hilariously funny without being a competition. It was really like an orchestra, like you said.
Yeah. So this is where we could talk shop a little bit, because I love the history of clown and of clowning. And it really started with the comedies of the ancient Greeks, you know, like Aristophanes, the frogs, and some of those plays. What's the one where they all have boners? They withhold sex from the men until the men stop the war. Anyone? Blanking on the name. Anyway, so it all starts back then. and then swiftly moves to Commedia dell'arte, which sprang out of, you know, Roman theater. It had these comic tropes and would travel all over Europe, and they always had the dopey clown like Kevin. They had like the weird intense clown like Dwight. There were these tropes, and basically all of comedy in the Western world, I think, is based off of those tropes from Commedia dell'arte. They influenced, obviously, Molière and then Shakespeare, vaudeville and clown characters like that, then moved into, you know, early radio and TV. You know, think about the Honeymooners and then the early sitcoms and Dick Van Dyke and Meredith Tyler Moore, and then on into the later sitcoms. And this constantly evolving process of these archetypal kind of forms that I really view like Michael and Dwight, and Dwight and Jim as like two comic duos, as being like inheritors of the history of comedy. I don't know exactly how they fit in. Certainly, you know, Jim was like the young lover, although he had that great deadpan and got more laughs than anyone else could have gotten in that role, with his, you know, his looks to the camera and his long sufferingness and quick-wittedness. But it's the essence of clown. You studied clown as well. Yes. And physical theater and stuff like that. I know this might sound pretentious as hell to people, but I don't care. Fuck them. How do you feel like it played into the clowns and the physical comedy of The Office?
Absolutely. I mean, I think primarily with Kevin and Dwight and Michael.
Mm-hmm.
But no, even Angela, Andy Bernard. Mm-hmm. Those characters, absolutely.
We all might have had clown noses on when you think about it.
Totally.
You could have put clown noses on all of the different characters. And even though it was a documentary and gritty and real and felt like in an office, like it was really happening, documentary style. And that was one of the things that I said to Greg early on into the writer's room, like, I really love physical comedy. And I think that Dwight really soars when he's doing physical comedy. I really want you to consider writing as much physical comedy for me as possible. And I do think that that's, when you think of The Office, you think of like documentary, uber real, bad lighting, reactions, looking at the camera and stuff like that. But you could do a compilation episode of The Office of like the physical comedy bits, you know, the fire episode, Dwight with Jan's baby carriage, or parkour and all of this stuff. Like
even you having to give me a massage. Do you remember you climbing up on the wall?
Yeah, I was on my feet on the filing cabinet behind you as I was doing that. So there's a really strong, constant vein. Like every episode, I would say, had some, at least one or two big bits of physical comedy and involving pain and getting hit and doors slammed in faces and whatnot. And that, I don't think that gets quite enough props or attention from people.
Well, and even pretending to be a different character than you are.
Right.
Right? You, yeah. A number of characters, and Jim, and me, and
when Jim dresses as Dwight and says, Bears beats Battlestar Galactica. And people always say, I want you to write Bears beats Battlestar Galactica, or if I'm signing a picture or something like that, or say it or something like that. I'm like, Dwight actually never said that. In 200 episodes, Dwight never said Bears beats Battlestar Galactica. That was Jim as Dwight saying that. I don't say that. I'm not a persnickety asshole going, Dwight never said that. But people should realize that Dwight never actually said that.
Wow. I would never have gotten that.
I blew your mind.
I never would have gotten that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have this comedy duo with Steve. When did you find out he was leaving?
I knew that Steve was going to get out of there as soon as he possibly could, because he had all of these movies that were wanting to pay him $10 and $15 million a pop to go do. So of course he would, like, you know. So
did you have reservations about the show existing beyond him?
Yeah, I had great reservations about the show existing without Steve. You know, did I think we were going to bomb and fail without Steve? No. Were we going to be hurt by losing one of the greatest comedic actors of all time in the lead character? Of course we were. No one thought otherwise. At the same time, we had a pretty damn great ensemble. You know, Ed Helms at the time was lead in Hangover, which was the biggest comedy ever made. And we had him, and he you know, I didn't think we needed like a Robert California or a Kathy Bates or, you know, a lot of other like big names to bring in at that point. I think we had the ensemble. I wish the creators, and I know they were doing a lot of battling with NBC at the time because we were starting to slip in our ratings even before Steve left. It's not like we were just on a ratings bonanza all the way through Steve, and then Steve left and we were declined. We were in decline for a good year or two with Steve there. But yeah, I knew it was gonna, I knew it was gonna hurt us, and I knew it was also time for, you know, all of us to step up in the ensemble and carry more weight.
Of anyone on set, who would be the most likely to be fired for an HR violation?
Ooh. Ouch. Boy. I first wanted to joke and say, oh.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from the Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
That would be me because I told a lot of inappropriate jokes. But at the same time, oh boy, you've got me stumped on this one. At the same time, for some reason, I'm going to Creed because I would tell inappropriate jokes, but people could always tell like, oh, that's Rain telling a really inappropriate joke. But at the same time, like Creed could tell one. And I imagine that certain people would kind of go, oh, he means it. He's actually going to chop up my body and put me in the trunk of his car or something like that. Or so I would say a tie between me and Creed maybe.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it was,
would you
really,
go with that?
I will now that you say it, it was all about you. I mean, okay. You would say things that, I mean, my language can be horrendously bad. I've kept it together somewhat here, but you somehow would put combinations of vulgar words together in a way that even made me uncomfortable and looking around like, who heard that? And are we in trouble? Oh my God.
But, you know, we made the show before all of this stuff, the Me Too and stuff like that. I hope I was never really, I certainly was never demeaning to anybody or cruel to anyone or, you know, coming on to women in some weird way. It was just like inappropriate jokes. But I heard about some other shows where people like off camera were like, dropping their pants and showing their genitals to the person who's on the camera. And that would happen all the time. And everyone thought, oh, this is hysterical. You know, like all the quote unquote hysterical hijinks that would happen that was really just straight up harassment.
That's what I always imagine people are wanting us to say about the pranks.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, no, I would moon Rain all the time.
Yeah.
Off camera.
Yeah.
And that was, no, we never did anything like that. Steve, and I'm going to talk to him about this. But Steve, he's been quoted, and I don't know if it's been paraphrased or whatever, but there's something out there where he has said that The Office could not exist today because of the culture of political correctness that exists in television. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think The Office would be a very different show. And I think that having a just colossally inappropriate boss who's making a lot of sexual jokes and innuendos and crossing lines and boundaries, we were sending up kind of a problem that was out there, an issue that was out there. We were shining light on it and poking at it. That's what she said. And I do think it would be very problematic in this day and age. How do you navigate that? Even if the guy is supposed to be an asshole, how do you navigate him saying just sexist stuff and racist stuff, and it's coming out of his mouth and he's just not aware? You know, it would have, I agree with Steve. I don't think you could do it.
I disagree with both of you. I can't. It makes no sense to me.
Oh, he took off his glasses. No, he's getting incensed.
It makes no—
Go,
no,
Brian.
No, but see, I just keep thinking he's been paraphrased incorrectly, but then now you just endorsed it. How can what is now the most watched show in television— you're telling me an executive is going to turn that down, the potential for that down?
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying, is that there would be a backlash. For instance, Diversity Day. If you had a show right now that was starting out— you know, not the Office that's a big hit show. If there was a show that was starting out and had a Diversity Day episode, and people were saying, like, try my googie googie to an Indian person, and if they were saying, I can't drive, are you Asian or are you a woman? And, like, you were saying, like, oh, I'm a Rasta man. I'm doing, like, and people were doing that stuff, like, there would be a lot of angry people on social media saying, like, this is inappropriate. This is— it's having a laugh at these stereotypes. Yes, it's sending them up, but we need to get out of this, and we cannot continue to participate. And there would be a huge backlash against it. So I'm not saying, like, could you do The Office now, but a show like The Office could never take off right now, because if it tried to play in the world of what's inappropriate, people just don't have a sense of humor about it. And partially for good reason and an understandable reason, and partially not.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them, with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dana Goodyear here. Have you ever wondered how a true crime podcast like Lost Hills gets made? How we unearth secrets and tease out the truth and deal with complicated characters while tackling sensitive subjects like violence, trauma, and deception? Now's your chance to find out. Join me and Jake Halpern, host of Pushkin's Deep Cover podcast, on March 16th for a digital conversation on true crime storytelling. Get your tickets now at momenthouse.com/DCLH. That's momenthouse.com/DCLH.
Hey, it's Jake Halpern here. If you've ever wondered what it's like to make a true crime podcast like Deep Cover, well, now's your chance to find out. Join me and my friend Dana Goodyear, who's the host of Pushkin's Lost Hills podcast, on March 16th for a digital conversation on true crime storytelling. We'll talk about how we make our stories dramatic and accurate, and how we navigate all the ethical dilemmas that we face in the process. Get your tickets now at momenthouse.com/DCLH. That's momenthouse.com/DCLH.
Will you play the Pam thing?
I thought it was weird when you picked us to make a documentary. But all in all, I think an ordinary paper company like Dunder Mifflin was a great subject for a documentary. There's a lot of beauty in ordinary things. Isn't that kind of the point?
So to me, that is what Greg says that it was all about. Is that what you think it was all about?
Yeah. The beauty of ordinary things. I'm going to sound pretentious again, and I'm going to take us back to the theater. But really, my favorite theater artist of all time was Anton Chekhov, the playwright. And Chekhov was one of the first, if not the first, that really saw the beauty in ordinary things and in ordinary people. And those, when you define what a Chekhovian moment is, it's a profound moment that's very simple, where hearts are broken over a teacup being passed around, or what's not said, or a longing, and it has some kind of physical manifestation. So I think at its best, I think The Office was Chekhovian in that sense, where there was a beauty found in ordinary things. And Chekhov's work has suffused so much of what's happened in theater, TV, and film for the last 120 years. You know, when you think about dramedy, like the word dramedy, half drama, half comedy, like he was the first. You know, you might argue that some of Shakespeare's romance plays kind of fit in that spectrum, but they really didn't. He was really the first that was like, I don't know whether to laugh or cry, and now I'm going to laugh a little bit, then I'm going to cry a little bit, now I'm going to laugh and cry a little bit, and it's just going to ride that line between buffoonery and heartbreak. And I think Greg and the writing staff and the cast and the directors really knew how to milk that. You know, the example I always give is one of my favorite moments was directed by Paul Lieberstein, who I think is an amazing director and a great writer, and who played Toby, obviously. I think it was in the episode Money, and it's Dwight and Jim in the stairwell. Dwight is heartbroken over Angela, and Jim gives him some advice, and I forget what it was even. But Jim gives Dwight some really heartfelt advice, like, you'll get over it, or you go tell her you love her, or something like that, something about Angela. And then Dwight has got his head down in his hands, and Jim slips away. And it's a spy shot of the camera down the stairs. And then Dwight reaches out with his left arm as if he would have put his arm around Jim and like hugged. And it would have been like their first hug ever. And Jim's not there. And he kind of, I mean, he looks around and it's this awkward moment. But I always think like if Jim hadn't left and if Dwight had just put his arm around Jim, like they might have bonded in a way that wouldn't have allowed the show to go on. Because they wouldn't have been the nemesis to each other. They would have like connected too deeply. And you can't have that on the show. You want to have them episode after episode after episode not connecting. But to me, it's like that little moment like defined what The Office was. It had absurdity to it, reality to it at the same time. It was based in heartbreak and then it twisted into something kind of peculiar and odd and awkward.
That's really smart. That, no, I mean, you're pretty smart.
I'm a smart guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know. You're, obviously, you started Soul Pancake 2008. You're a very spiritual person. That's important to you.
Yeah.
What, or
spiritual
do you
spiritual person who tells really inappropriate jokes.
The worst.
Or used to tell really inappropriate jokes.
The worst.
I bite my tongue
You
now.
Still do.
I don't.
Do you feel like there was a good that came from the show?
Yeah, so you know my spiritual life and that world is like you mentioned is important to me. You know, prayer and meditation and thinking about you know life's big questions and our purpose here and how we can be of service to one another, how I can make myself a better person. All of these big spiritual questions occupy some time and space with me. So I truly believe that at the end of the day, we weren't kind of trying to do this. But I do believe that The Office was a spiritual show. You know, anytime I'm kind of recognized, people will say, thank you for the show. It meant so much to me. My parents were getting a divorce or my little brother had cancer and we would watch it together and we would cry. It got me through some of the hardest times. I mean, every day, like people write into my Facebook, like it got me through such hard times. I was going through depression. I was anxiety and disease issues, whatever, mental health issues, and The Office got me through that. And I think that the reason that The Office has lasted the way it has is because all great television is unlikely families. And it's the most unlikely family. And you love to be with that family. There is something really soothing about showing up, hearing that theme song, you're in that office with these characters that you love, you want to cohabitate with them, you want to work in the office with them. I've talked to so many young people that have said, I want to work in an office just like in Dunder Mifflin. They're like thinking that somehow
right.
that out in the workaday world that it's going to be even remotely like The Office
right.
is the most wrongheaded thing known to man. But yeah, I think we made something that ultimately made people laugh, got their minds off their problems, that brought a lot of like comedy and warmth and heart and connection. And that's really what people need now. And so they're watching the show. It's not a cynical show. At the end of the day, it's people that do love each other, as weird as it is. And it's been a positive force in the world. I didn't doubt that when we were making it, but I didn't even really think about that when we were making it. But the heart of the show, the heart of Greg Daniels, the heart of all the actors and the writers kind of has lasted.
Yeah. What are you the most thankful for?
The house that The Office bought me.
Fair.
No. No, I'm, yeah. No,
but that's fair.
Oh, yeah. No, I had been a struggling actor. You know, I got out of acting school 89, 90, something like that. So here I am in 2004 starting to do The Office. So 14 years of struggling to kind of pay the rent. And then all of a sudden, you know, I had an actual career. It opened a lot of doors for me. I got to do some cool movie stuff and work with a lot of cool people and be involved in some cool enterprises because of it. And I'm super grateful for that. But yeah, I'm most grateful for the fact that we made a gift for audiences that I think it'll be around for a long time.
Why is that though? I mean, we've talked about all of these elements that went into creating the show and why we think it's special and what makes it unique and that, but why now are 11, 12-year-old, 14-year-old kids watching this show over something else?
Oh, there's so many reasons. We've been over a lot of them.
Sure.
It's an unlikely family that is formed. They're relatable characters. You want to hang out with them. But I also think and Greg always said, like, it's 90% funny, but 10% kind of truthful and moving. And if you stay on that, you don't want to go more than 10% because then it starts to get sentimental and maudlin. But it just has that 10% per episode of reality, of truth, of real connection that grounds the show, that gives it a lot of heart. But also like the style of the comedy, it never tells you when to laugh or that you have to laugh. There's no laugh track. You can choose to laugh at something or not. You know, someone can look at the camera. Some people can find it hysterical. Some people won't. Maybe the third time you watch it, you do find it hysterical and you hadn't the previous time. So you're finding a lot of those details. We talked about the detail that went into positioning the cameras and how you're going to shoot stuff and get reaction shots. And so I also think there's a great amount of detail in there. So it stands up on repeated watchings where a lot of other shows may not, because the jokes are kind of hit a little harder. There's so many reasons, but I, at the end of the day, I have to think it's just the heart. I mean, I think people just loved those characters and they just feel like they're a de facto family.
Okay. So it's been 15 years.
Since we shot the pilot, yep.
Who shot the pilot? This is about Rainn.
Okay, Rainn Wilson. Here we go.
Do you consider your old coworkers family or friends? Remember, you can choose your friends, but not your family.
Oh, wow. That's a profound question. You found a life's big question packed into The Office. God, that's such a good, I don't know. I guess I would answer it like Michael Scott, and he would say, is The Office cast my family? Is The Office cast my friends? I think they're my family.
You're a jackass. God, you're a jackass.
Do you want me to be more sincere?
No, are you kidding? I love that.
So that's good jackass, not bad jackass?
Oh, wait, let me ask you one more thing. So in doing research for this podcast, I found out that 52.1 billion minutes were streamed in 2018 alone.
Dear Lord.
I guess this is average lifespan, over 100,000 people watching it for their entire life.
What? Oh my God, that's nuts. People just need to get a life. I mean,
it wasn't listen, one person.
Listeners, I love you all. Thank you for watching The Office. But there's so much else to do. Read a fucking book, people.
Written by Rainn Wilson?
Yeah, I've written two.
Right.
So
I know.
There's a couple.
I have.
Jenna has written a book. And
BJ has too.
Mindy. Read only books by The Office cast.
instead of listen to this podcast and read books by people.
From The Office.
From The Office.
And buy our merchandise.
All right, Rainn, I love you.
I love you, Brian Baumgartner, and I've missed you so much. I hardly ever see you. Thanks for having me on this show. This promises to be really exciting and cool. I'm so excited for this thing.
You started to sound like you were being sarcastic, and then you turned genuine halfway through your sentence.
That's kind of my thing, is like, am I sarcastic? Am I being a dick, or am I being genuine? Kind of riding that line. And yeah.
Okay, suck my balls.
Okay, bye.
All right, guys, that is it. Mr. Rainn Wilson, I hope that you had as much fun listening to that conversation as I had having it. I don't know if that's not quite right, but whatever. I enjoyed that so much. Huge thanks to Rainn for joining me and talking to me. And bigger thanks to you for listening. I will be back next week with more of the goods. We're going to go deeper. We're going to go bigger. We're going to go divier. I don't know. We know I don't know numbers. I don't know words either, apparently. But we'll see you next week. The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Lee. Our senior producer is Tessa Kramer. Our associate producer is Emily Carr. And our assistant editor is Diego Tapia. My main man in the booth is Alec Moore. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend Creed Bratton. And the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
New Year's resolutions with the Before Breakfast podcast. In each bite-sized daily episode, you'll learn how to make the most of your time with practical tools to help you feel less busy and get more done. Listen to Before Breakfast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the creator of The Bright Sessions comes a new fiction podcast for all ages. When a fellow student vanishes, Max starts to look into the disappearance. Her investigation draws her deep into the dark woods around Hastings and even deeper into the secrets and lies that course through the veins of this sleepy town. This new YA mystery from writer-director Lauren Shippen is an audio drama with heart and wit that involves the audience in a way no fiction podcast ever has. Listen to Maxine Miles on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by AdoptUS Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit AdoptUSKids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by AdoptUS Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch, so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take control of your diabetes with the #1 recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.